Community Development Committee meetings on Monday, October 18th, 2021, and welcome my fellow council members, Verna Seale and Tom McLeod. And we'll start with item 1A, which is a resolution adopting the South King County Housing and Homeless Partners, SCHIP, 2022 work plan and operating budget. And Laurel, you will be presenting on this. Is that correct?
Yes, thank you. Good evening, council members. Before you tonight is a resolution adopting SCHIP's work plan and budget for next year. Per the interlocal agreement, once the SCHIP executive board, on which Councilmember McLeod serves, once the executive board approves the work plan and budget, each member agency's legislating body must in turn approve those things before they take effect. And so I just want to take a few minutes to provide a quick overview. We also have Angela Sanfilippo, who is the executive manager, on the meeting. She can provide clarification and answer any questions. However, I've asked her to plan to make her full detailed presentation at next week's Committee of the Whole. The full council can benefit from that information at the same time. So just really briefly, the work plan for 2022 includes items in the areas of governance and administration, policy and planning, education and outreach. And some highlights I want to call to your attention include implementation of the Housing Capital Fund, creating a 501c3 fundraising branch, establishing and moving forward with the advisory board, 3 to 5 year strategic planning, allocating funds from the new capital fund, partnering with jurisdictions on local housing policies and programs, developing state and federal advocacy priorities, stepping up public outreach campaign. Those are just a few. And the 2022 budget reflects increased jurisdiction contributions by 15% to better reflect the operating costs that were unknown as SCHIP was just getting started. These are population-based, and Tipula's contribution for 2022 is $8,625. Ms. Sanfilippo, is there anything you'd like to add to that?
I don't think so, Laurel. You did a great summary, but yeah, happy to answer any questions if you do have any at this time.
All right. So this will be a full presentation next week, but we may have some questions that we want to be answered either today or next week at the meeting, or some comments to make ahead of time. And I'm going to start with Tom, since he is on the SCHIP board, executive board. Is that what it, you know? What are you on this?
I'm on the, I think it's called the executive board, right?
Okay, yeah. Member and the executive board, right? So you're on the executive board. So I'll start. As you look through this, did you see anything that you want answered now or before next week? Or
One of the questions that I have, first of all, I'm in support of this. You know, the Tukwila contribution is only going up $1,100, the 15% increase. So we're going from 7,500 to what is on page 12, so 8,625. So we don't have a big jump in the future budget or the next budget. And so the one thing that you know, it's going a good direction. I like the creation of the 501c3. You know, we spent a lot of time talking about just kind of the makeup of the capital fund as to how that's going to work and the advisory board and the role they're going to play in advising the executive board. So the only question that I want to ask about is on governance and administration. It talks about a 3 to 5 year goal. And how do you think we're doing on that? I mean, how long has SCHIP been around? 3 to 4 years?
So yeah, good question. SCHIP was formed in 2019. So I think all of the cities signed interlocal agreements about midway through 2019. But I was the first staff that came on in January of 2020. So in terms of sort of moving things forward, the beginning of 2020 was really when we had some staff to move a lot of this forward. And then that is one thing, to Councilmember McLeod, your point that I believe we've been missing is those longer term goals. So we go through this annual planning process per our interlocal agreement, but I do think we want to identify some longer term goals for just sustainability of the organization, where we're going, where we see ourselves in that future. And that's something that we really haven't done at the executive board level. But I do think is a missing piece to your point. It helps us to track, you know, progress and accountability to all of our SCIP partners, as well as to this new advisory board that we're asking community members to be involved with and impact our decision making. So something that we've talked about at the executive board and prioritizing for 2022, but that we have not done. So looking forward to that. I think we've made really good progress in terms of a lot of setting up some of the structure for the organization, but I think we really do want to think about those longer term goals of where we want to go as an organization, and getting feedback from all of our SCIP partners is really an important part of that.
And I'll make one other comment and then I can yield back. One of the concerns I have is there was some discussion about increasing staff capacity to two full positions, and I would be concerned about staffing up more than what we have without, you know, a designated project that we're targeting. It'd be nice to have a project that we were all working towards and we staffed up for that. So getting too administrative heavy would be a concern of mine, and probably some pushback that'll happen at that next discussion. So that's just my couple of thoughts, and I'll yield back. Thank you.
Thank you. Verna.
Yes, I was a SCIP rep when SCIP was formed. So I was there in the very beginning before Tom. And, you know, I'm really pleased at, I mean, it was just formed in 2019. It's only 2021 and we had a pandemic. I mean, I applaud the work of SCIP and the work that they have done, the work that you have done. Bringing you in was a great thing. You know, these things take time. I like the formation of the advisory group. I think the resolution looks great. I think this is one of those things that is going to take time, and it is a regional issue. So I really don't have any questions, any concerns, as far as bringing on additional staff. I think that will kind of, you know, as things go along, you know, I fully expect that if there is an ask for a staff increase, that it'll be fully vetted by the member cities. So I'm not concerned with it at this time at all. So as far as I'm concerned, this looks great, and I look forward to it being on our next meeting agenda. Thanks.
Yeah, and I have a couple questions that you can just answer briefly right now, Angela, and then more next week, because I'd like everyone to hear the answer. The first one is looking at the work plan. It's on page 7 of our agenda here. And the mission says that it's working together, sharing resources to create a coordinated, comprehensive, and equitable approach to increase housing stability, reduce homelessness, and preserve and produce quality affording housing. Now, how have you discussed how you're going to measure those goals are, you know, the mission? That might be a little bit difficult to measure, but that's pretty important. Have you talked about that or thought about, you must have.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So we have talked about that specifically. We have some really great partners who, with the Affordable Housing Committee, who are measuring more as a region, kind of regional goals around the housing need. One of the things that we are specifically working on this year and into 2022 is tracking and monitoring the affordable housing across the region. So that's in the work plan as well. That gives us a measurement tool for not only the amount of actual regulated affordable housing, that's in the region, but also thinking about our naturally occurring affordable housing stock. And that's a way for us to really track our progress in terms of both that regulated, so those that are tied to affordability requirements, if those come from a funding source or from a policy level, have an affordability requirement tied to them, but also thinking about South King County's really large housing stock that's not regulated. And that's a way that we can monitor how our affordable housing policies are working, not working, and some of that progress that we might be making. So that's at a broader kind of higher level across the region, a way that we can kind of monitor progress. But we certainly will be, as we look at allocating housing capital funds that are pooled, we'll be looking at monitoring, you know, the number of units that we're either preserving or producing and attributing, you know, where those dollars are going from each of the jurisdiction and how many public dollars are leveraged, public or private dollars that are leveraged in addition to that. So that's another way that we can track actual units that are being produced, but then also tracking how our funding is being spent and how that funding is being leveraged, because I think that's part of our success as well, is bringing additional investments into the region, recognizing that our public resources really can't go this alone. Affordable housing in general is fairly expensive. Housing just as a whole is expensive to build. So thinking about the leveraging of resources as a mechanism to track investment into South King County's affordable housing is important as well.
So that'll bring me to my second question, but I do want to make some comments about that. I saw that in your governments and administration that you are going to, I didn't see the tracking, the housing, or I thought I saw it in here, but I can't find it now. I did see, or maybe this is it, maintain inventory and assessment. No, that's policies. Anyway, I think it would be very valuable if it's in here somewhere, that you are tracking and identifying where the affordable housing is in the county. I think that would be that's really good for Skip to be able to do that. And then it also says, the inventory was of policies. I thought it was inventory of housing, but doing both is great. I think that would be really helpful. So where is the existing housing? Which brings me to the next question that you just talked about a little bit now. I really want to hear about this next week. And that is a capital fund and how you just alluded to that you can't do it all yourself. So actually, you don't even need to talk about it now. Let's talk about the capital fund next week, because I'm really interested in what you've got going on with that, because that's how we get new housing, that and partnerships, right? So those two things. Tom.
I think the capital fund's important, but I think equally is this 501c3 that could get private funds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's something to really pursue, and maybe, I don't know if we would lead with that, but it certainly is intriguing, the possibilities.
Okay. Any other comments? So we're looking forward to next week, and then also we have an action item, and that would be to approve the resolution. So we'll do it during COW, and then hopefully we can get that resolution approved the week after that or whenever it comes up. All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thanks, Angela. Okay. So the next item on the agenda is an update on the Trusted Community Partner Network. Now, this is on our agenda for the COW. Verna, did you have a question?
I'm sorry, are we going to get like exactly the same thing in an hour?
Okay, so that
just
is
wondering.
I think
if this is for information only, is there a recommendation that, anyway, I'm jumping the gun. Go ahead, sorry.
I said exactly the same thing. I think this was a courtesy touch by staff, so because it really would come through our meeting. So once again, Derek, just tee it up and let's hear the whole thing. You don't need to go through the slide presentation or anything. Just tee it up so we can we get the touch here, and then we'll hear the whole thing in COW.
Yeah, perfect. And Councilmember Hogarty, that is exactly why it's on this committee meeting. So the reason it got on tonight's council meeting was for two reasons. One was the Port of Seattle is going to be sending a letter to the council. If you haven't already received it, you'll be receiving it soon. And we think a lot of it's going out to all city councils across the county. So we think there'll be a lot of buzz between city council members. So we wanted you to have this information if you start hearing other people talk about it. So we wanted to get the presentation to the full council fairly quickly. And tonight it worked out for both of the speakers to be at tonight's council meeting. Next week it wasn't going to work for one of those speakers. And we wanted to give the committee an opportunity to just have a conversation with staff before you get to the full council meeting. If there's anything that you want to talk about that you may not want to raise, I will be there at the council meeting. I will introduce the speakers and I'll be there to also answer questions if you have. But basically, I think it's sort of a no-brainer. It's a pretty simple thing for Tukwila. Basically, it's the Port of Seattle has a proposal. The proposal is to create what they're calling a Trusted Community Partners Network. It's basically a, it would be a group of individuals who and organizations that would be navigators to help small businesses connect with resources that are out there. So if you think, if you're familiar with community navigators and social workers, this is like social workers for small businesses. And basically, it's the need, and this is one of the types of uses that in the $200,000 that I submitted for ARPA funds that went through, I think must have been the finance committee, it came to full council. Part of that $200,000 was for help for small businesses and navigation. And the reason is it's been very evident during the pandemic. We have so many small businesses. There's language barriers. There's resource barriers. There are resources out there that some of our businesses haven't been able to avail themselves of. And so this navigator program that the Port's proposing would help in that regard. It's not going to solve all of our needs, but it is a step in the right direction. And you'll see in there what the cost would be from Tukwila, be like $44,000 over a two-year period. And we could use the Port of Seattle annual grant for that money. It would exactly match that money. So we could either use ARPA funds for it or we could use the Port grant. And that's really pretty much it. And then they can explain it in more detail today. But if you have any questions or want to talk about anything before it gets to full council, we're happy to do that.
All right. Thank you, Derek. And we'll start with Verna.
I don't have anything that can't wait. Thanks.
Thanks. Tom.
I have a couple of questions. Derek, so the contribution, that's equal to our population number. Is that right?
Yep.
I thought we were under 21,000. This says we're almost at 22,000.
Right, so, yes.
Okay. So there's a chance here that the port grant could be our contribution to the port fund.
Yep.
Right? So we would need any general money or ARPA money.
Correct.
And how much can a, so we would be giving 21,000 per year, roughly 44,000 or 22 to 44. And how will this benefit, how does a Tukwila business, how much can they get?
So the businesses will not be getting any money from this program directly. Oh. What this program will do is basically the money, our money will go to the Seattle Metro Chamber. The Seattle Metro Chamber will contract with organizations and individuals. That'll be called Trusted Community Partners. And so the money actually is going to pay for those organizations, individuals. And what they'll do is they will be people that speak many different languages or organizations that have many different languages available that they, and they will also understand what business resources are available. So an example would be right now, the federal government, Small Business Administration, has a loan program called EIDL, Economic Injury Disaster Loan, EIDL. Small businesses can apply for that loan, and then once they've applied for the loan, they can apply for, if they're within certain parts of Tukwila, low-income areas of Tukwila, they can apply for a $15,000 grant. And it's like, basically, you don't have, and you do not have to accept the loan. Once you apply for the loan that gets you in the door, you can accept the grant and say you don't want the loan. So right now, the federal government would give $15,000 to many Tukwila small businesses. And the thing is, our businesses don't really know about that because it's a little confusing to explain. And if you're somebody, you know, of course, we've sent emails out to our businesses about the program, but an email really doesn't cut it. And especially if they speak different languages. So what this program would be is this would be a group of folks that would write up the emails about that program in different languages. And we could use that to market a program like that. And that's just one example. And then if we get businesses that speak different languages or want help to understand the program, we can send those businesses to these navigators. So like if some a navigator might speak a different language, it can help those businesses understand and apply. Did that?
Okay, let me take it just a little bit further. You said we will then give our money to the trusted community partners. Can we trust that Tukwila will be treated equitably in this pool of cities?
I think we'll get more equitable than even other cities are. So I think our need is greater. We have more businesses for our size of city that have a need for this than other cities do. So I think yes, absolutely, ours will be treated equitably. I think the challenge will be other cities may not want to participate in the program because they will see the answer to that question differently. There could be other cities that don't have the same diversity that we have and thus the same need.
Do you have to be diverse, BIPOC, to participate in this?
You do not, but that is the primary focus of all of it. So for an example might be, let's say that same loan program grant I was just mentioning, they might create a webinar to help businesses, and the first part of the webinar will be in English, but then they would have interpretation during the webinar in multiple languages, so it would be really serving both.
Okay. Thank you. I yield back.
Okay. Thank you. I'm looking forward to this presentation coming up and us talking about it more and seeing the slides go on. I don't have any questions right now. So it sounds good. You're working with, why am I blanking on his name?
Dave.
Yep.
David, he's the one really spearheading this.
And you want to talk about having confidence in somebody. I absolutely have confidence in, even though I can't remember his last name, David. Right. Yeah. So, I've worked with him a lot on economic development, and he knows what he's doing. So, and partnering with the port and with the chamber, I'm sure that they'll have lots of really good resources.
And I'm glad you mentioned the chamber. So, our goal in economic development, we want our businesses to get resources wherever they are. So this grant and this group would not be exclusive. We send businesses to the Highline Small Business Development Center. We send them to our local Chamber of Commerce. It's been doing a lot of great work, and we will continue to do that. But this is extra horsepower to that same kind of work.
All right. Thank you. So we'll see you at the next meeting. All right, thanks. Okay, let's go on to the next item, which is an update regarding the Department of Community Development. And Nora's going to give that to us. She's got some information for us here, too. So take it away, Nora.
All right, good evening, everybody. This is just an information-only item, just trying to have one of those periodic check-ins and talk about how things are going in DCD, given all the changes that we've seen this year, I guess, and last year too. So you guys are also talking about ARPA stuff later this evening. And so part of that is this unfreezing of the positions in DCD. So just kind of a rundown on all the different kind of changes that we've had recently. So Max Baker taking on the, what was the planning supervisor, now we're calling development supervisor because the development review engineers are under him now. Nancy Eklund has been kind of closing up her current planning work, although she still is doing some of that, but working on transitioning into being our long-range planning manager. So we're starting to talk about coming up with a work plan for the upcoming comp plan update. I think there's been some desire to talk about a strategic plan update, as well as various other ordinances and changes. So trying to get our arms around what we can accomplish around those goals. Joseph Mose is our new code enforcement officer, and he's just doing great. He's jumping in. He's been doing rental housing inspections. So he's kind of cross-training as both in the rental housing program and as general code enforcement, so that Tia will be going on parental leave in January, and so making sure that we have somebody trained up to step into those shoes and help out where he's needed. So we're trying to hire two associate planners. We've hired one who started in September, and he's doing great. He's really enthusiastic and just kind of jumping right in. And then we recently interviewed for that second position, and we have an offer out. Hopefully things will work out and we'll get somebody else on perhaps in November. And I have to give a shout out to HR. They've been so busy and yet so helpful to us through all of these processes. It's been pretty intensive work. We've had a lot of needing to re-advertise, people dropping out of the process. It's been pretty labor intensive to try and find the people that we found. I've been happy with our hires, but definitely taken a lot more work to sift through the pools than it has in the past. Senior plans examiner Casey Ellis, he had previously worked for the city and then went to work for the port for a couple of years, and so he's been able to just kind of slide back in and just hit the ground running. So that's been great. We did hire a development review engineer, and we brought that person on board at the same time as Joanna, anticipating that Joanna Spencer would be retiring towards the end of the year. He may be being lured away from us. We're talking with him to see whether it's possible to convince him to stay, but, it's a tricky time. So we'll see. We may need to start over and re-advertise for that position. The construction industry is so crazed right now. We're still looking for the combo inspector. And so we're bringing on the people as we're able to find quality people and encourage them to come here. But it's been a difficult hiring environment, as I'm sure everyone has heard these days, right? So all of that said, we been working with Vicki quite a bit on the mid-buy adjustments, and we think we're going to come in probably slightly below our budgeted amount, even though we've kind of had a lot of sort of unexpected expenses and things going up and down. But we think we're pretty comfortable with where we're going to wind up. Interestingly, one thing that kind of jumped out of looking at the data for me was that our building permits and permit valuation has been declining through the course of this year. I mean, 2019 was a huge, huge year. We brought in twice as much as we would normally. 2020 lower, but not as low as we thought we were going to be. 2021 a little lower still, which is an interesting phenomenon. And I'm not sure whether that's a blip or a longer trend. We still have a lot of work because we took in so much in 2019, and that, just takes its time to move through, especially the inspection part, which you get the money in 2019, but you're doing the inspections a year or two later, so it works through. And so I think generally DCD has at least covered, if not more than covered, its annual budget. This year, I don't think we're on track to do that from permit revenue. So then in terms of throughput, we've been basically able to maintain our level of productivity, but we really haven't seen productivity gains so far, which given the fact that we've only had people started here for a month or two is not surprising. It takes a fair amount of effort from our existing staff to onboard new people. And so those gains are kind of canceled out until they get more independent. So it wasn't the story I was hoping to be able to tell you tonight, but we are moving through them, and we're also trying to work on greater efficiencies. We're looking at what we still call public works permits, although they're living in DCD right now, trying to improve that whole permitting scheme. And then, you know, again, with the continuing to try and improve the experience for our online permitting and create additional efficiencies through that process. You know, given that, we've still had a lot of other work going on, the Housing Action Plan and that work that you've just heard about with the applying for a grant through SCIP to do that inventory of affordable housing. Got the small cell ordinance updated, and so we're working at implementing the procedures that are talked about in that throughout our permit system and our processes, and getting people trained up on those new approaches. The HB 1220 ordinance, which was adopted, and I really commend council on that difficult work that went actually very smoothly through that. And then hopefully this evening we'll be closing out on the Tukwila South residential design guidelines. So that's most of our legislative agenda for the year, kind of wrapping up here, which will give us a little bit more breathing room to focus on other things. Of course, fire is having challenging times right now, the fire marshal's office. And so I think our permit center has been trying to be of assistance that we can with them, helping to, they are working through things, they are trying to keep things moving, but it's obviously a difficult time for them as well. So any questions or things we can talk about some more on these issues?
Okay, I'll start with Tom. Question.
I do have one question. Nora, probably, 4 or 5 years ago, when you had a planning position, you shared with me that you might have got 200 applications. Mm-hmm. What do you get now when you put a job out there?
Yeah, I remember complaining about how long it took to sort through the resumes. Little did I know. I would say we've been getting 20 to 30 applications, but some of those were just, I'm on unemployment and I need to apply for a certain number of jobs. People just very little connection to it. I'd say we probably have, I think we interviewed 6 people, and it wasn't a lot of like, weighing who we should interview and not. It was sort of like that was really the pool of people that we thought were, you know, worth both of our times to interview. And then, you know, we were hoping that maybe we would get 2 good planners out of that pool. We did have 2 good planners, but one of them turned us down. So we got 1 good, and then we had to re-advertise, and now we're, it was an even smaller pool. But again, we thought we found 1 really good person who seems sharp and able to hopefully slide right in. So hopefully we can seal the deal on that. So there are still quality people out there, but not as many hard decisions as we've had to make in the past.
Okay, yes, it's tough time for, this is like any business, to get to fulfill staff requirements or obligations. So, yeah, feel for you there. Keep up the good work. This is still going to be a work in process, getting DCD to the place that you probably envision it to be, or that we all hope it can be. So I don't have any further questions at this point.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Verna, question.
Thank you, Nora. This is very helpful and to understand. I may have missed it. What's going on in the fire marshal's office again? Are we down? Are they down staff?
Al Metzler has unexpectedly passed away.
Oh, God, that's right. That's right. I'm sorry. That's right. Okay. All right. Well, I don't really have any other questions. You know, I know you guys are doing the best that you can with everything that you have. I'm hoping,
tonight we can provide some relief through ARPA funds. Mm-hmm. So that's my hope. So, but thank you. I don't have any other questions.
Sorry, I have a phone that just is ringing and it says spam. So, okay, we're done with that. I thought I turned the, it's our landline. Anyway, so yeah, I have a few questions. One is I'm interested in code enforcement. So this is new information to me, which I'm sure you've been trying to work around. And that is that it looks like you're going to have two people on leave in code enforcement here pretty soon. Is that true? On personal leave?
Just Kia. Jim will be here.
Okay.
And Joseph, even though he is a new father, is not just took a little bit of leave before he started.
Okay. And not to get into their business that much, but this is all about coverage. So when the one employee is on leave, how are you going to cover that position?
So that's why Joseph is training with Kia right now. So he can step into doing the inspections and we'll be ready to cover that rental housing portion.
Okay. But then you're going to stay with four employees after that.
That's the current plan, yeah.
Okay. Great. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
So what has happened to, has there been any way that you've been able to shorten the time for permits or permitting experience? What's going on with the permitting experience? I know you've got challenges, so has there been able to be improvement there?
That's what I was hoping to be able to tell you. I mean, I think we're trying to tackle a bunch of finding different ways to deal. I mean, there's the bigger problem. There's just the bodies problem. But then there's also, what can we do that's more efficient? How can we streamline processes? And I think we're trying to work on a number of those items as well. Not that they've translated it, hopefully, as much into tangible results as I'd like. You know, currently we're just starting this process of redoing the public works permitting. So that's going to be a little ways off. You know, we're trying to do things like one of the challenges we faced is that people used to come in and submit their drawings at the counter and they'd sit down with the code or the permit tech and they'd say, hey, you know, you're really missing this important thing. Why don't you just go home and come in next week rather than us take it in, spend 3 weeks to review it, send you out a incompleteness notice, and then you have to resubmit. But when people are submitting online, they just kind of throw some stuff over the wall at us and we're getting really poor quality applications, which is slowing them down and slowing us down. So that's where we started offering the virtual intake appointments and encouraging people to take advantage of those. So you get some of that same benefit of sitting down with someone and they're saying, I don't really know what you mean when you ask for this document. And the permit tech can explain and say, oh yeah, okay, that's this thing that I already have, or no, I don't have it. Maybe I should go and get that before I do my submission. So we're trying to provide more guidance and help for people in those kinds of areas. Not everyone thinks they need it, and it's a voluntary program now, but there is that. We're also providing more virtual appointments for people so they can make, you know, Teams meetings with a building inspector or one of the planners. You know, it's a little haphazard to try and call and get a hold of somebody. But when you have an appointment on their calendar, you know you're going to be able to call in and reach and talk to the right person that you need. So we're trying to kind of shorten the number of calls and the distance for getting people the specific help and the specific person that they need to talk to get through their permitting questions. You know, and then I guess the other thing that we're really trying to have the permit center take a more active role in permitting. And so that is not just sort of waiting for things to get done and then processing them, but doing a lot more reporting around how many permits are there out there that just have one review left. And maybe we can, you know, give that division that information like, hey, we could get this out if this one little thing could get finished up. And also trying to make sure that things somebody fills something out wrong and it falls through the cracks, making sure that we're kind of doing a sweep and trying to pick those up. Like, hey, applicant, did you know that you're still missing this fee and that's why your permit hasn't been issued? Like, maybe you missed that email, but we can't go any farther until we get this kind of thing. So trying to address the non-substantive issues that are delaying permits. Councilmember McLeod, did you have a question on that?
Yeah. So to that point, because you know I've had some developers express their frustration. So let me ask, when you say, hey, applicant, you're missing that point, is that a letter you send them? Is it an email? Or do you pick up the phone and say, hey, applicant, if you could just provide me this here, I could get this thing done and move it forward for you? That would all come down to just the time it would cost.
Right. Most of the time that winds up being an email, so we can put it in writing or send them a screenshot of something. You know, sometimes if it's somebody we have, you know, a working relationship, we'll give them a call and just say, hey, could you go into the permit thing and, you know, fill that out or give us that thing. Yeah, just kind of depends what we think might be most efficient at the time. And yeah. And also trying to reach out to people. We may still send a correction letter, but at least have that conversation first so we make sure that we're really targeting in on the thing that we're missing or misunderstanding about their permits, rather than kind of sending of like, I don't know what to make of this, resubmit, because it doesn't make sense to me.
So. Right. Okay. Thank you.
It's a process.
Well, I think those are really important things that you just talked about, Nora. Just like, I don't know what to think about this resubmit. They'll be like, well, what do I resubmit? So I really like your ideas of having consultations, if you want to call it that, with people about their drawings and doing it over online. And I get that when you're, it's like, so they're being submitted electronically, and now you can't do it, that kind of intake unless you do it electronically. Maybe that's what other cities are doing. You might talk to them. I don't know what's going on there. We're going to be asking in fourth quarter for a report back from DCD. And these are really good pieces of information for us to have. So it's good for us to know that you have a challenge with people submitting plans that are, you know, it's like, what is this, right? So that's really good for us to know and for you to let us know how you're overcoming that. And it's good for us to know that you're doing your virtual help appointments and that you are willing to do a second touch if you, as far as an email, a phone call, whatever it is, because it is easy to have like an email from the city get buried in all the emails, especially if you're a business and you get tons of emails and stuff like that. So those sound like all really great things that we'll want to hear about when in the fourth quarter, we'll want to hear about all those things. So, I couldn't think of anything else. The permitting seems to be the thing that we're hearing about a lot. And it sounds like that you're doing what you can right now with the amount of staff that you have and being creative. And like I said, we'd really like to hear about that. So thanks. All right.
Trying to hit it on lots of different points.
Yes, tell us all that good news. I mean, it doesn't sound, it's like you're struggling, right, because you don't have the amount of people, but, and yet you're doing things to change that. And then when things get better, then it'll maybe really help accelerate the process. So, I mean, as far as having enough personnel.
Right.
So,
right. I mean, it takes a certain amount of time to do a quality review, and that just takes, you know, focused attention, but then there's a lot of these other things that are around that process that maybe we can work on shortening and making more efficient.
Yeah. Well, that'll be really good for us to hear and for us to pass on when we do hear, like Tom hearing, and we can say that, you know, DC is working on it. They've got some good ideas here.
Yeah.
Now, Tom, you still have your hand up. Did you want to talk again, or was that from the before?
It's from before. Sorry.
Okay, no problem. So any other questions from my fellow council members? Thank you so much, Nora, for
all
bringing
right.
information is really interesting. Thanks.
Thanks for the opportunity. All right.
Yeah, and so we are done. And I will see everyone I will see my fellow council members at 7 o'clock. And thank you too, Nora.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.